This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Basic Witches, How to Summon Success, Banish Drama, and Raise Hell with Your Coven, by Jaya Saxena and Jess Zimmerman. Narrated by Amy McFadden. Publisher's note, this audiobook has bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type Basic Witches into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page, then click on PDF Extra 1. When prompted, enter the access code BROOMSTICK to access the bonus material. Chapter 1. Self-Initiation. An Induction into Basic Witchery. Witches are everywhere these days. Fashion trends feature flowy black clothes and dark lipstick. Magazines and websites run special witch-themed issues, and hipster covens are forming in Brooklyn. What's so appealing about the witch? Partly nostalgia. Women now in their 20s and 30s fondly remember growing up watching The Craft and Sabrina the Teenage Witch, reading Harry Potter, playing light as a feather, stiff as a board at slumber parties, or saving their allowance for a collectible light-up Hermione wand. But the witch isn't kitsch. The modern witchy zeitgeist doesn't only glance backward into childhood. It looks forward to the future of powerful, defiant women. Witchcraft appeals to the weird, the outcast, and the unconventional. It has long been a spiritual practice belonging to those on society's fringes. And cultural images of witches, gleaned from history and movies and books and TV, resonate particularly with women who reject the strictures of expected female behavior, women who are trying to connect with something stronger and scarier. In the original Old English, witch was a word that could apply to women and men alike. In fact, Wicca, from which we get the word witch, can be directly translated as male witch or sorcerer. But in the 15th century, witch hunting guides like the Malleus Maleficarum argued that women were more inclined to witchcraft because they were inherently weak, physically, mentally, and spiritually, and susceptible to the devil's machinations. This theory may sound ridiculous, but ideas like this have influenced notions of witchcraft, and, broadly, of women, for centuries. Witch quickly became a charge levied almost exclusively at women, particularly women who lived alone, outside the confines of the community. The witch was not beautiful, or she was suspiciously too beautiful. At any rate, she didn't look the way others thought she should. She refused men when they didn't appeal to her, pursued them when they did, and satisfied herself with that, wink wink, broomstick she always rode. She had cats instead of children. Other women came to her for care and comfort, but also turned on her when associating with her threatened their social standing. The witch was intimidating, after all. Too strange, too unruly, too much. But in mainstream modern U.S. culture, we've largely defanged the witch. Our cultural image is sometimes evil, but sometimes silly, as if to suggest that the best way to counter things we don't understand is to laugh at them. Witches have green skin and warts and ride around on brooms yelling at children, and then they get houses dropped on them. Personally, our favorite pop culture witches retain that old, defiant, unruly nature. They're smart, strange, fearlessly ugly, sexy on their own terms. But for the most part, our culture no longer fears those traits in witches. Now it mocks them. Modern-day self-identified witches, and pagans and Wiccans, different groups that share some common beliefs, are trying to rescue the witch from haters and scoffers alike. They have resurrected old religions and traditions, and sometimes combined them to create new communities. Witches of all stripes, from the religious to the spiritual to the secular, gather in covens or practice alone. Defying cultural stereotypes about witchcraft as dangerous or ridiculous, they find power in a goddess, or nature, or themselves. This book isn't for them, though. They're all set. This book is for you. Who are you? You're not necessarily a practicing witch. You might not believe in magic or mysticism or spirituality at all, but you're intrigued by the power or the sisterhood or the devil-may-literally-care attitude of the witches you've seen in pop culture and history. You don't think women should be considered frightening or ridiculous just because they don't toe the line. You probably identify as a woman, but maybe you don't. Maybe you're outside the gender binary, or maybe you're a man who's committed to justice for all. We are going to talk mainly about women in this book, because a lot of historical and cultural crap surrounding witches has been directed at women specifically. But we're also going to talk a lot about how societal notions of masculine and feminine, who can be witch and what they're worth, are total bullshit. You might be into spiritualism and the occult. Maybe you don't believe tarot cards truly predict the future, but you still give yourself readings when you feel lost because the symbolism helps you tap into your hopes and fears. Maybe you've gotten together with friends to put a hex on your ex, not because you believed anything would happen, but because it was fun and made you feel better. Maybe you've bought spells out of the backs of magazines just to see if they work. Or maybe you dressed like the girls from The Craft because, hey, it's a good look. Or maybe you're not into the myth and ritual at all. Maybe you're literal and pragmatic, and you know for a fact that magic is not real. Maybe you don't think pretending otherwise is even helpful or fun. But you still appreciate the historical witch, the unruly woman, the woman who refuses to obey, the community healer with her cauldron of herbs, and recognize yourself in her. For you, a witch is any woman who understands she has power even when the world insists she doesn't. Whether you wear all black and light candles for luck, or you have no truck whatsoever with spells and witchy outfits, if you want to dismantle the cultural conditioning that trains women to be weak and small, you're in the right place. Welcome to our kind of witchcraft. What we mean by witchcraft. Though it was once effectively a death sentence, the charge of witchcraft has never been supported with much evidence. We know women were accused of performing magic and consorting with the devil, but all we can truly know is that they pissed off someone in power, whether for performing an abortion or refusing to be Christian or saying no to a man. In this book, witchcraft doesn't mean occult or religious practices that historical witches may, or may not, have engaged in, nor does it mean the religious practice that is a sacred tradition for many people worldwide. We don't want to diminish that kind of witchcraft or lay claim to it. For our purposes, witchcraft means the kind of mundane pursuits that might once have resulted in accusation. Enjoying sex, controlling reproductive health, hanging out with other women, not caring what men think, disagreeing, and just knowing stuff. Our witchcraft is a cultural ethos. Our witchcraft is about rebellion, not for rebellion's sake, but with the purpose of living true to ourselves. That may mean embracing the traits you've been told make you weird, gross, insufficiently feminine. Many women are taught from an early age that any power we have, even power over ourselves, is considered dangerous. But witches revel in that danger. Ambition, assertiveness, nonconformity, high standards, the ability to say no, control over your own body. All witchcraft, by our definition. Our witchcraft also means practicing arts that may be devalued because they're too feminine. Listening, supporting your friends, choosing clothes, applying makeup, crafts and cooking, taking care of people or animals, making and keeping friends, allowing yourself space. If you speak when you're told to be quiet, take pride when you're told to feel shame, love what and who you love whether or not others approve, you're practicing witchcraft. Some of these abilities you're probably already in touch with. Others might be less familiar. You might feel ashamed for not being good at them naturally. I don't know anything about makeup, why am I so bad at being a girl? You might turn up your nose at them because you've been taught that they're unmasculine and therefore unserious. I don't care about feelings. I'm logical. You might have deeply ingrained beliefs telling you that certain skills are off limits. But if I speak up, people will think I'm such a bitch. But none of this power is beyond you. This witchcraft is your birthright, not just because you're a woman, if that's even how you identify, but because you're a person. Mainstream culture wants you to fit into a predefined role. Witchcraft enables you to find personal purpose, truth, and intention. It allows you to discover the crafts, talents, and interests that make you you, without requiring that you recognize any one skill as superior or essential. You already have the potential to be a strong, self-actualized, powerful, ass-kicking witch. All you have to do is recognize your abilities, hone your skills, and channel them into making some magic. What we mean by magic. This book cannot teach you to levitate, conjure wealth, or communicate with ghosts. Though if you figure out how to do any of that, please call us. What it can teach you are mantras, incantations, rituals, and other tiny spells that allow you to tap into your latent abilities and hidden power. Even if you know on some level that you can access and experience self-confidence, inner calm, and emotional acceptance, you might find doing so intimidating, embarrassing, or just plain difficult. The magic of this book will help you actualize those positive feelings. We'll talk about using magic to feel confident, to deal with your past, to envision your future, to break out of negative habits. You'll learn how to create an eternal bond by making hot chocolate, use crystals and talismans and tarot cards to harness power, and move through grief by making a friendship bracelet. This magic might sound a little silly, but the theory behind it is simple logic. Human brains are weird. Everyone's, not just yours. Sometimes the more you tell yourself to do something, the less you want to do it. Even when it's something you really want to do, like supporting your friends in their successes, demanding the treatment you deserve at work, or generally valuing yourself. No matter our good intentions, we all make excuses to avoid doing what we know we should do. But rituals can redirect your focus, forcing your brain to subvert these excuses. Our version of modern magic is a means for navigating any mental obstacles that crop up. Essentially, magic is a set of tricks to outwit yourself outwitting yourself. We said brains were weird. And it works. We know, because we've made it happen ourselves. This example sounds a little grim at first, but stick with us. Back in 2001, soon after the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, letters containing live anthrax spores were delivered to a number of media outlets and congressional offices. Several people got sick, and 5 died. On the heels of 9/11, most Americans were already somewhere on the spectrum between traumatized and extremely tense. And for Jess, who lived in Washington, D.C., where some of the attacks took place, the anthrax sent that anxiety into overdrive. How much overdrive? She broke out in stress hives, which, of course, she worried were cutaneous anthrax. Jess knew that she was vanishingly likely to be an anthrax target, even accidentally, but she couldn't stop her brain from trudging over and over around the same irrational circular track. But then her friend Kevin came through with a magical amulet. "What you need for anthrax," he said, "is wax. Public Enemy says very clearly in their song, Bring the Noise, that wax is for anthrax. You should get some wax." Sure, the reasoning was patently ridiculous, but so was being worried. So, Jess got a bit of wax and knitted a little wax cozy for it and carried it around with her and instantly felt better. Why? Public Enemy aren't exactly wizards, except in the sense of being magically excellent musicians. And the wax was just wax. It didn't have any powers. but it kept Jess calm because its presence became a reminder to stop letting her brain chew itself to death with worry. And, as such, it was an extremely effective magical talisman. The system works. You may never experience anthrax anxiety, but you probably do have an equally specific problem that magic could help with. So, we've grouped our magical suggestions into chapters on beauty, love, sex, friendship, and negative emotions. We encourage you to experiment with all the spells in this book and to feel free to adapt them to suit your needs and comfort level. Do you feel silly speaking an incantation? That's fine. You can recite it in your head. Is one of the spell components too hard to source in your apartment at midnight on a Tuesday when you really need closure on your past relationship? That's fine. Improvise. Think of our spells as starting points for recognizing all the astonishing ways in which you can communicate with your own brain and change the course of your thoughts and emotions. Of all the elements of a successful spell, your intention and desire for change are the only essential parts. Meet your local witches. We, Jess and Jaya, will guide you through your journey to witchy self-actualization, even though, well, sort of because, we're not witches in the traditional sense. We don't practice witchcraft as a religion, but we do see ourselves as continuing a long line of unruly women, refusing to let others define who we are or how we should be. Think of us as your Hagrids. We're here to bring the news that, by our definition, you're a witch already. We're mostly like you. We've made bad love decisions, second-guessed ourselves, hated our bodies or faces sometimes, and tried to get through a whole day wearing uncomfortable shoes. We've worried about being pretty enough, successful enough, feminine enough, lovable enough, grounded enough. And eventually, after years of expending so much mental energy on these worries, we realized that a lot of this neurosis was coming from outside us. If we could cast off these ideas of what we should think and look like and be, if we could trick our brains into a better way of seeing with bespoke spells and rituals, we could get beyond those societal shoulds and into a safer, happier, more comfortable place. But we also have a history of dabbling in witchcraft. Jaya cast her first spell when she was 12 to get her mom to let her go to Seth's bar mitzvah. It worked. She is a New Yorker who was born around Halloween, so black clothes and attraction to the creepy have always been part of her personal brand. She was raised without religion, but through a combination of influences from her Hindu grandmother, Quaker high school, and Jewish in-laws, she understands and appreciates the power of ritual. Jaya believes in intuition, and that most spells are just a way to tap into it, a formalization of intent, a way to organize swirling thoughts by spending a moment alone with a candle or screaming in the woods. Her 10th great-grandparents may also have been hanged for witchcraft in Connecticut in the late 1600s, if Ancestry.com is to be believed. Jess is an aging goth and a comics reader, so she owns a lot of black clothes and skulls and has read a lot of those books about magic with a K. But she is also a lifelong atheist and doesn't believe in mysticism or the occult. She does believe in the human mind, though, and she's a big fan of using spells and rituals, though not necessarily those with candles and sage, to hack into and redirect mental habits. Also, and probably more importantly, she's a big mean feminist who wants to smash patriarchy, white supremacy, and whatever other systems of oppression look like they're cruising for a bruising. Jess is super into the witch as a woman who doesn't comply, either with demands that she be weak and malleable, or with gender norms that devalue some of her interests while making others off-limits. We'll occasionally pop in to tell you stories about our personal relationships with magic and witchery, like the one about the wax. But our goal is to guide you through the process of finding, owning, and loving your own scary powers, whether that means building custom spells, finding new witchy role models, or just learning to embrace the parts of you that are too intimidating, too strange, too unruly, too much. Let's start raising some hell. Our favorite pop culture witches. The difficulty in finding witchspiration is separating fiction from truth. We know the names of historical witches like Marie Laveau and Tamsin Blight, but relatively little about their daily lives, and we definitely don't know whether they could indeed hex and curse, as myth now suggests. So, if none of history's witches feel like the right role model, turn your attention to pop culture, which offers no shortage of badass, powerful witches to admire and emulate. Here are a few of our favorites, and the specific skills they bring to the table. Witch, Hermione Granger. Skill, self-assuredness. One might be tempted to peg Hermione as a mere bookworm, but time and again she proves she contains multitudes. She's a fighter, a kind friend, and not above snagging an invite to the dance by flirting with the hot guy from out of town. Hermione is proof that if you believe in your own power, no one thing can define you. Only you get to define yourself. Witch, Tiffany Aching. Skill, intuition. The eponymous heroine of Terry Pratchett's young adult books learns to be a witch and finds out that it's more about hard work and psychology than hocus pocus. Tiffany can be impatient and a little conceited, but she's also loyal, sensible, extremely perceptive, and good at making cheese. She, and the witches who teach her, remind us that sometimes witchcraft is just a fancy word for keeping your house in order and caring for your own. Witch, Gillian Owens. Skill, rebelliousness. Gillian Owens is the wilder of the Owens sisters in practical magic. She's the one who'll get a tattoo on a dare, move across country just because she feels like it, and collect men like they're Pokemon. She's also a fiercely loyal and devoted sister, niece, and aunt. Sometimes her spontaneity gets the best of her, but hey, sometimes the best way to get rid of a man is to hex his maple syrup. Witch, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Skill, empathy. Sabrina is the type of witch many of us strive to be, navigating through the world, taking care of the people we love, and always using our powers for good. Also, who doesn't want a sassy talking cat? Sure, sometimes she makes things really weird for a day at school, but she knows how to forgive herself and apologize, and that's strong magic indeed. Witch, Sarah Bailey. Skill, bravery. The craft's Sarah Bailey is a witch who understands that right choices are not always easy to make. She easily could have followed her coven into reckless and harmful magic, but instead she fights against them, even when they try to use her mental health struggles against her. Witches, the Witches of Eastwick. Skill, the power of the coven. Is there any better story than the one where three powerful women discover they're better off without a toxic man? We think not. The witches of Eastwick are indeed manipulated by a man, but they grow to understand they're stronger together. Their story is the ultimate triumph of female friendship. And, of course, Cher is the best. Chapter 2. Glamours. The power to change how you look. It's no coincidence that glamour, the term for an appearance-changing charm in early English tales of witches and fairies, has become a modern word denoting charisma, beauty, and elan. Appearance can be magic, and powerful magic at that. But instead of casting shape-shifting spells, we can experiment with new makeup, bold outfits, and rebellious hairstyles. Changing your appearance might sound simple or shallow. In fact, it's anything but. Society tells women that devoting oneself to beauty and fashion is at once obligatory, otherwise we look unforgivably hideous, a silly waste of time, appearance is inherently superficial, and deceptive, See, men posting memes about makeup as betrayal and the reason you have to take a woman swimming on the first date. But within these crazily contradictory expectations lies the root of glamorous power. Beauty is something that women alone are expected to perform, involving mysterious rituals, talismans, and bottled potions, which can influence an observer's perception to the point of being almost menacing. It sounds like the beauty arts are scoffed at precisely because they make women powerful. In reality, you're not deceiving people when you indulge in cosmetic shape-shifting. You're not being shallow, either. Rather, you're letting your true self shine through. You're slogging out from the mire of messages about acceptable appearances and discovering how you want to look, perhaps not by magically changing your hair color a la Nymphadora Tonks, but by learning how to manipulate and enhance your self-image using makeup, hair, and clothing. Whether you draw strength from unusual lipstick colors, an all-black outfit, or a lucky amulet, this chapter will help you discover how to look and feel more like yourself. How to clothe yourself in literal darkness. You don't have to wear all black to witch here, but it helps. The first step in casting off beauty ideals is to return to a blank slate. And by blank slate, we mean black slate. Because if witches know one thing, it's the power of the color black. Black clothes, black hats, black cats, black chokers, black nails, black lips, black magic. Why black clothes? Take your pick. Black is good for standing out, but it's also good for blending in. Think of spies or cat burglars. Basically, if your job involves doing secret things at night, this is your color. All black outfits can be chic, punk, businesslike, bohemian, dressy, or devil-may-care. You'll almost never look out of place in black. Unless you're at a wedding, and even that taboo has started to fade, probably because so many people's go-to dresses these days are black. In Western countries, black is associated with death and mourning, so by wearing the color of death, you project a kind of fearlessness. And, sure, people say black is slimming, but really? Black is the color of vast things. The night sky, the deep earth, the inside of your head when you close your eyes. In a way, wrapping yourself in black brings you close to infinity. Plus, it doesn't show dirt and it matches everything. Unless you are working as a stagehand or attending a funeral, you don't have to wear black. But if you've never walked out the door in head-to-toe midnight, you ought to give it a try. Put a little bit of power, vastness, mutability, and doom into your wardrobe and see how you feel. Here are a few tips for easing yourself into the all-black sisterhood. Take baby steps. If black seems too intense but you still want to cast dark, witchy vibes out into the world, start by incorporating other dark colors into your wardrobe. Deep purples, blues, silvers, and grays all evoke the night sky, and nothing says, "Don't mess with me or I'll feed you a poison apple," like blood red. And if all over black feels too flat for your aesthetic, find black clothing with a bit of shimmer or sparkle or pattern. Play with proportion. Massive black robes might make you look like a witch, or like a nun. Instead, try pairing a long black skirt with a black camisole, or black jeans with a black crop top, or a black sweater with black shorts. Unless you like the nun look, in which case absolutely go for it. Mix textures. Black-on-black patterns and textured fabrics, lace, embossed velvet, sheer, jacquard, tonal stripes, can fit any style from goth to chic, and a little goes a long way. Plus, having clothing in a variety of textures can save you from the witch's primary sartorial challenge, spotting the one black garment you're looking for in your pile of all-black clothing. Keep black clothes beautiful. To prevent fading, wash black duds in cold water using a detergent specifically designed for darks. Extend time between washings of black jeans by placing them in a plastic bag in the freezer to kill odors. Remove deodorant stains from black tops by wetting the area, covering it with salt, and letting it stand for a couple of hours before washing. And if your clothes do fade, don't drive yourself crazy digging for a slightly more faded pair of black leggings to wear with a slightly more faded top. Life's too short to match blacks. For a witch, it all counts. Curl up and dye. There's no shortage of black clothing on the market, but making your own can be fun. Most craft stores sell black fabric dye, and although you can dye just about any garment, this is a good excuse for a shopping spree. Cool gloves, a vintage lace slip, or a luxurious shawl are easy to dye yourself. Plus, a vat of black liquid steaming on a stovetop is pretty close to a bubbling cauldron. Highlight with color. Like the black velvet display case in a jeweler's window, your all-black outfit can serve as a background to set off whatever colorful gem you want people to focus on, whether that's a piece of jewelry, a tie, a bright hair color, a favorite hijab, a bold lipstick, or just the general gorgeousness of your face. Strategic use of black can command and direct attention as well as any spell does. Now just grab your coordinating black cat and take yourself out on the town. Dress to sorceress. Honing emotions with magical outfits. Every time you get dressed, you're putting on more than just a clean shirt. You're clothing yourself in an emotion, a persona, a sense of yourself. You're making a choice that affects how you'll move through the world. You probably have outfits that make you feel beautiful, handsome, or sexy, and totally different outfits that make you feel comfortable. You may even have certain items that feel like armor, such as cowboy boots, the perfect pencil skirt, or a favorite necktie. Jess's is a motorcycle jacket. Jaya's is a pair of wedge sneakers covered in red glitter. All these garments, your hot clothes, your comfy clothes, your armor clothes, not only make you feel a certain way as you wear them, but remind you how you felt wearing them in the past. What you wear affects your mindset, and, consequently, the way you carry yourself. Although your clothes may alter your behavior in unconscious ways, think of how you automatically walk differently if you switch from combat boots to heels, you can actively engage the emotional power of clothing to change your mood. Not all witches dress alike. Nancy from The Craft wouldn't be caught dead looking like Winifred from Hocus Pocus, so you can make clothing magic work within your personal style. Here are a few starting points for working simple spells every time you get dressed. For stability, wear flat or heavy shoes. When you need to feel grounded, leave the stilettos at home and opt for sturdy platforms, wedges, ballet flats, or sneakers. For emotional protection, wear layers. Having more than one thickness of fabric between you and the world makes for a safer, more armored feeling. For confidence, wear loud jewelry. If you make yourself small and quiet in the presence of others, let your jewelry do the talking. Wear bangles that jingle and clang, anklets with bells, or rings that clink together when you move your fingers. For comfort in times of stress, wear soft, soothing textures. By wearing fabrics you like to touch, like velvet, suede, or fleece, you can easily comfort yourself in stressful situations. Try a velvet dress on the first day of school, or a jersey skirt on a date, and rub the fabric between your fingers when you feel nervous. For relief from worry or fear, wear tight-fitting accessories. Ever put a nervous dog in a thunder shirt? Same idea. A little, gentle, pressure can help you focus on being present in your body, which activates the parasympathetic nervous system and quells anxiety. Try a cloth headband or wristband for stylish relief. The more you use clothes to focus your emotional energy, the better you'll get at channeling a particular feeling whenever you need. The power has been in you all along. You may not be able to wear a motorcycle jacket everywhere, at certain weddings, for instance, or at most job interviews, or on the beach, but inwardly you'll be wearing a spiritual motorcycle jacket, one that nobody can remove. Makeup for witches. Getting the unnatural look. Women are taught that makeup is best used sparingly, as an enhancement to one's natural features, and most makeup on the market reflects that attitude. Lipsticks come in shades of pink, red, and various flesh tones. Eyeshadows promise to bring out the color of your eyes. Blush is tinted to play up the bloom in your cheeks, and mascara is designed to lengthen the lashes you already have. Study upon study shows that men do not like women who wear too much makeup, that they prefer women to look soft, unintimidating, and natural. But everything about makeup is unnatural, and that's why it can be so powerful. Wearing cosmetics, whether tinted lip balm or full-on contouring, is just good old-fashioned shape-shifting. You decide to change the way you look, and then you use tools at your disposal to do so. That's amazing. That's witchcraft. Rather than highlighting what others consider beautiful, you can emphasize what you think is beautiful, or weird, or scary, or whatever you want people to notice, and then use non-traditional color choices to achieve that effect. Red eyeshadow, blue mascara, and green lipstick are all just as good options as pinks and browns. Here's how to make the best use of makeup. Go back to black. Unlike soft pastel or subtle cosmetics, all black makeup is an extra bold look and can banish your expectations about what a made-up face should look like. Paint on black lipstick or apply liquid eyeliner to lips. Paint the entirety of your eyelids black and smudge it out as far as it'll go. Hell, use black eyeshadow as contouring bronzer. Even if you wear it for just a few minutes by yourself, let black makeup be a positive shock to your system. And snap a selfie while you're at it. Give yourself a magical color boost. Enliven your palette by looking to the colors that witches traditionally associate with emotions or qualities. Reds grant strength and power. Blues are all about tranquility and peace. Yellow connotes joy. Green deals with luck, especially in finances, and purple signifies healing. The signs of the zodiac are sometimes associated with specific hues, too. Pair colors with facial features to further strengthen this magic. Want to channel female energy to your soul? Cover your eyelids in silver powder. Want to encourage kind words to come out of your mouth? Paint your lips orange. Want everything you touch to bring you financial success? Get yourself a green manicure. Make yourself look weird. Abandon all pretense of natural in favor of scary, or silly, or dead serious. Instead of skin tone bronzer, dust your cheeks with a wild color of eyeshadow, like dark blue or bright purple or neon green. Swap your usual blood red lipstick with yellow, orange, or white. Sprinkle on glitter, or try affixing skin-safe sequins with cosmetic adhesive around your eyes. Take eyeliner way outside your lash line. Swipe colorful mascara on your lashes and your brows. Then observe your look and how you feel about it. What are the things you like about your face, not because you've been told they're traditionally beautiful, but just because you like them? Pushing the boundaries of what makeup should look like pushes back on society's expectations. But more than that, it helps you discover your own personal definition of sexy, pretty, or attractive. Get naturally unnatural with DIY makeup. If you want to truly feel like a witch mixing up potions, whip up your own makeup at home. It's easier than you'd think, and you can control exactly what goes into it, and, therefore, onto you. Any homemade makeup consists of either a liquid base, for things like lip tints, cream blushes, or eyeliner, or a neutral powder base, for powder foundations, blush, and bronzer, plus coloring ingredients. Common liquid bases include coconut oil and petroleum jelly, and arrowroot powder is a popular powder base. For color tints, anything non-toxic and safe to eat is fair game, But avoid inflammatory substances, like ground cayenne powder, in your mixture. If you're not sure whether your makeup might irritate you, apply a small amount to the inside of your wrist as a patch test before getting close to eyes or lips. For recipes and spells, please go to the bonus PDF. A spell to find your colors. Lots of beauty brands will try to match flattering colors to your skin tone or eyes, but what are the colors that are going to make you feel as beautiful and enchanting as possible? What you'll need: a full moon, a bathtub, a candle in your favorite color, matches. Draw a warm bath and light the candle at the edge of the tub. Stare into the flame as you recite this incantation 3 times. Fire, earth, water, sea, let the rainbow shine through me. Repeat the incantation silently as you close your eyes and picture yourself from above. Visualize your body, and then watch the water around you slowly change color. It could be all one color or a few. Then let the color or palette you see inspire your makeup looks, even if it's a shade you've always been told not to wear. Be as bold or subtle as you like. If you see blue, for instance, you could go for retro blue eyeshadow, striking ice blue lips, or even a classic blue-toned red. If you, like Jess, hate baths, you can also find your spirit colors by meditating. Close your eyes and picture yourself in a room where you feel a profound sense of ease and safety. You are sitting in an armchair, and there is a flower in a vase. Concentrate on your feeling of security. Then look at your surroundings. What color is the upholstery? The flower? The quality of the light in the room? Now envision yourself outside, in a setting of transcendent beauty. You're surrounded by flowers here too, and the scenery is so spectacular it almost takes your breath away. Concentrate on that feeling of overpowering beauty, and then look around. What color are the flowers? What color is the sky? These visualizations help you tap into the colors you associate with different mental states and thoughtfully incorporate them into your makeup and wardrobe in order to feel gorgeous or invincible. Witch history. When wearing makeup made you a witch. According to a popular myth, married women in Britain were once legally banned from wearing lipstick on pain of having their marriages annulled and being accused of witchcraft. In reality, no such law existed, or, if it did, no historian has found proof of it. But its persistence as an urban legend reveals the extent of society's deep distrust of makeup. Many people can believe that lipstick was once not just a tool of beauty, but a tool of the devil. In fact, in addition to rumors, some real historical laws have linked lipstick and sorcery. According to lipstick historian Jessica Pallingston, in medieval England, a woman who wore makeup was seen as an incarnation of Satan because she was changing the face God gave her. However, wealthy women at the time were hiring alchemists to whip up lipsticks for them while chanting incantations, and evidently Satan's rules didn't apply to the rich. By the 1500s, Catholic women were told to mention lipstick use in confession. In the 1700s in America, a man could have his marriage annulled if his wife had worn cosmetics during courtship. Although in France at that time, going barefaced was considered acceptable only for prostitutes. Go figure. Before the advent of commercially manufactured cosmetics, a part of the suspicion regarding makeup was the effect some ingredients had on the wearer. Rouge for cheeks and white powder foundation were made with lead and mercury, which could eat at skin. Women dripped belladonna, aka deadly nightshade, into their eyes to make them appear big and seductive. Given the occasional dangerous, and sometimes lethal, ingredient and makeup's ability to camouflage one's appearance, no wonder it was considered so witchy. Even after the age of literal witch hunts, makeup remained a lightning rod for issues of politics, class, and morality. By the 1910s in America, bright red lipstick became a symbol of defiance and women's emancipation, as retaliation against cosmetics often being sold under the counter. Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Charlotte Perkins Gilman wore red lipstick at the 1912 New York City Suffragette March to show that they meant business. As the look gained popularity, lipstick was seen as so terrifying that it was almost banned by the male officials of the New York Board of Health in 1924 for fear that women would use it to poison them. You know, like a witch would. No matter the historical era, at the heart of any makeup controversy has always been the fear of feminine dishonesty. Every argument against cosmetics, whether anger that they give women power to enhance their appearance, or outrage that they allow women to call attention to themselves, boils down to men not wanting women to be in control of their own bodies. Which, unfortunately, many men still don't want. Stanton and Gilman wore red lips to protest more than 100 years ago, but lipstick still has the power to confuse, annoy, and terrify. We see no reason to stop now. A spell to wear bold lipstick. This spell helps you feel beautiful and self-assured while defying beauty standards, something ordinary pink lip tint can never give you. What you'll need: a cheap tube of bright lipstick, a red candle, a safety pin or small knife, matches. Growing up, Jaya was always timid about bright lipsticks. She thought they'd only draw unwanted attention to her lips, which felt awkward and too large for her face. But change came in the form of lavender lipstick she spotted at the makeup store. At first, she thought, this shouldn't work. Surely it would wash her out, or clash with her undertones, or do something that makeup experts thought was wrong for her face. But she tried it on anyway. Maybe the makeup experts were right. It didn't emphasize her coloring or do her undertones any favors. It looked weird, but then it looked awesome. Looking at her reflection, she realized she actually liked her lips and could wear whatever she wanted on them. All she had to do was summon the confidence. Wash your face so that it is free of all makeup. Apply the lipstick to your clean lips. Then, in the middle of your chest, draw a swirl using the lipstick. Make it as big as you can. Maybe you strip down to your bra for this. Then draw swirls on your arms, legs, neck, and all over your body until you're covered, or until you run out of lipstick. Reserve the tube. You'll need it later. With the safety pin, carve your name into one side of the candle and a pair of lips into the other side. Kiss the lips you carved. Place the candle in a fireproof dish and light it with the match. Staring into the flame, recite the following. My lips are mine. My lips are free. My lips will look how I want them to be. Close your eyes and picture your face, remembering those words. Sit that way for as long as you like. Let the candle burn down until the flame dies, and then take a shower. After you've washed off all the lipstick, keep the image of yourself wearing it in your mind's eye. Carry the empty tube in your purse or backpack for a week afterward. The dark magic of unfeminine haircuts. In recent years, the notion of so-called ideal beauty has shifted. Although ideas of what makes a woman beautiful still skew white and Western, American society has started to accept, a little, variation in terms of whether women should be plump or thin, short or tall, dark or pale. But one thing is compulsory: long hair. Sure, the pixie cut enjoys an occasional fashion moment, but usually this style is lauded as part of an androgynous look rather than a feminine one. Perfect femininity, whatever that is, still requires long, smooth, flowing locks. Thankfully, we witches cackle in the face of perfect femininity. We aren't interested in conforming to standards so much as triumphantly watching people squirm when the standards are destroyed. Your witchy hairdo can be an engine for confidence and power, power that comes from you alone, not from your ability to mimic ideals. It can also be a signal to other unruly women that you're part of their coven, that you're daring, unconventional, and uninterested in traditional femininity. If you have Disney princess tresses and love them, of course, by all means, keep them. But no matter what Little Women taught you, never believe that your hair is your one beauty. This isn't true. And even if it were, you don't owe your beauty to anyone. If you're looking to break out of the hair box, wow, does that ever sound like a gross euphemism? Here are a few types of hairstyle magic to consider. Shaved head. The shaved head is a banishing spell. It's a total elimination of the concept of hair as accessory. With a shaved head, your face is what you get. Shaving your head is a drastic change, and you risk learning the hard way that your skull is a weird shape. But weigh that against the prospect of freeing yourself from one of the million things women are supposed to worry about. How to do it. Talking a stylist into shaving your head can be hard. There's no going back with this do. But it's not hard to DIY, if you have the courage. First, cut your hair short with scissors. Then have a friend use an electric clipper over your whole head. Start with a long guard on the clipper and see how it looks. You can always go shorter. And don't forget, your head now needs sunscreen, even more than the rest of you. Undercut, side shave. The partial shave is a hex on expectations. You have options with this cut. Shave the side, shave both sides, shave the underside all the way around your head. Shave everything but your bangs. Technically, this last one is called a Chelsea cut, not an undercut. But this distinction matters only when you go to the salon and ask for it. We include it here as a variation of partly shaved, partly not. In some ways, a partial shave is even more subversive than a full buzz cut. Instead of doing away with feminine tresses entirely, you're cutting into them, mutilating them. Here's what I think of your beauty standards, this style says. Also, it's well ventilated in the summer, and with it, you kind of look like Tank Girl. How to do it. We recommend enlisting a stylist, especially for maintenance between cuts, which can be tricky. Shave whichever side you prefer. If you're bold enough to give yourself this look, start shaving from where your hairline meets your ear up to the parietal ridge, located about 3 finger widths above the top of the ear. You should be able to feel a bony ridge on your head where your skull starts to curve. Although, shaving the entire side can look great too. How far back you shave, or whether you continue all the way around from one side to the other, depends on your preferences and your courage. A 3/4 around undercut can look weird, but sometimes weird is good. If you plan to shave more than an inch or two behind your ear, ask a friend to wield the clipper. Start small. A long guard on the clipper, not shaving too much. And remember, you can always shave more, but you can't go back. Pixie cut. The pixie is a binding spell, combining apparent opposites, a boy's haircut, and an iconic look in women's fashion. It's androgynous in a calculated way that says, I am stealing the power of sexy manhood and sexy womanhood at once. Stylists and fashion magazines, which typically subscribe to and reinforce that old thin white cisgender beauty ideal, might advise against attempting the pixie unless you have every other classical marker of feminine beauty. A thin body, high cheekbones, big eyes, full lips, whatever. But we encourage you to harness the powers of the pixie, versatility, liminality, really, really easy maintenance, no matter your face, form, or gender presentation. How to do it. Do not DIY this look. It's much more complicated than running clippers over your head. Go to a salon with a stylist who specializes in short hair, if possible, and bring pictures of what you'd like. Ask for a look that's a little shorter than you think you want, especially in the back of your head, because hair tends to grow in fast. If it's too long near your neck, that's your ticket to Mullet City. The mullet is, of course, a legit look, see below, but if you want a pixie, it probably isn't what you're going for. If the stylist says that you don't have the face for a pixie, pack up and take your business elsewhere. Asymmetrical cut. The asymmetrical haircut is an illusion spell, changing your look from every angle. You're not just one thing, so why should your hair be? Like the undercut, this style contains multitudes. Shorter on one side, longer on the other, a la Tegan and Sarah. Short in the back, with long wisps in the front, a la Ramona Flowers. Or even the classic mullet. This do is a radical embracing of duality. Attempt it when you've learned, or want to learn, to love your contradictions. How to do it. This is another look that's best achieved with the help of a professional. Bring the stylist pictures of the haircut you've envisioned, but also ask what kind of look will work for your hair length and texture. Don't forget practical considerations of your new do. For instance, will half of your hair now be too short to put up in a ponytail? Can you live with that? Or do you need to tweak your plan? Natural hair. Natural hair is a shape-shifting spell, says writer and beauty expert Hanna Giorgis. There's this idea that to be marked feminine is to have your hair straight or as close to white women's as possible, she says, which means that by embracing your natural texture, if it's anything other than smooth and straight, you're giving the finger to stereotypes. Although Hanna does not personally feel like I'm reclaiming my blackness through her natural hair, some women do have this experience. She does feel, however, that her hairstyle keeps her in touch with herself in a purely practical way, through the practice of self-care. Having to slow down and spend time with her hair, she says, can be really restorative and a space for reflection. How to do it. The process of growing out a perm depends on your hair's texture, how long you've been chemically relaxing your hair, and the look you're going for, says Hanna. Accordingly, she recommends watching YouTube tutorials from people whose texture matches your own. There's a huge community to immerse yourself in, so it's not a solitary experience now, as it might have been years ago. Also consider taking baby steps. I personally recommend growing your hair out for a little bit, chopping it off, and doing braids, she says. You can kind of ease your way into it. And remember, it's just a shape-shifting spell. The body can always be altered. If anyone weeps about you ruining your one beauty, remind them that your beauty is too vast to be contained in a mere 100,000 strands of collagen. Besides, beauty isn't just something you have, it's something you do. The power of glamour comes from manifesting the exact image you want. Any hairstyle that creates positive feelings is beautiful. A spell for haircut confidence. Even if you're ready for a change, a drastic haircut can be a leap of faith. This spell can help settle your mind before you head to the salon. What you'll need. Scissors, smaller is better. 2 pieces of tape. Use the scissors to snip a small lock of hair from a hidden spot on your head. Tape one end of the strand to a table or counter. Stroke the strand 7 times, focusing your mind on your anxieties. What's the worst case scenario for this haircut? What are your worries about your appearance? What are you frightened people will think of you? Carefully separate the piece of hair into 3 parts and plait it into a simple braid. As you braid, picture your anxieties being tangled and trapped into the pattern. Each time you cross one strand over another, more of your worries are caged inside the braid and away from your conscious mind. Tape the end of the braid. Remove the taped end from the table and fold it over to hold the other end of the braid. Hold the braid between your hands, close to your heart. Thank your hair for having been a part of you and for carrying your anxieties away with it. Bury the hair in a flower pot or in the ground, or loop it around a branch of a tree or bush to release your anxieties into nature. The power of a good talisman. If you've ever believed in the power of a favorite necklace, a lucky